look, we need to get the work done, but it's more important to get the work done right.
A tense Senate vote on health care. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, July 25th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, a dramatic rescue in frigid waters.
The water was cold, it was probably in the upper 40s out there, but he was swimming extremely fast considering he was in a life jacket.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by First National Bank Alaska. For nearly a century, First National has been Alaska's community bank. Learn how experience and local knowledge make the difference at fnbalaska.com.
It was a dramatic day in the U.S. Senate with a vote to advance a Republican health care bill. Alaska's two senators split their votes. Both told Alaska Public Media Washington correspondent Liz Ruskin the outlook for the bill is uncertain.
Protesters in the gallery were escorted out individually. Then, with their chants still ringing in the chamber, 99 senators sat grim-faced as the roll was read.
Ms. Murkowski.
Senator Lisa Murkowski's answer, no, was barely picked up by the microphone, but it was heard loud and clear across the Capitol. On a procedural vote on whether to begin debate on a bill to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act, she and Senator Susan Collins of Maine were the only Republicans to vote no. That meant a 50-50 tie, which the vice president broke, keeping the bill in play. Murkowski told reporters this isn't the way to pass a health care bill, with no hearings and major elements of the bill still in flux.
Look, we need to get the work done, but it's more important to get the work done right, that substance matters when it comes to health care reform.
She says she's well aware that Republicans back home are disappointed in her. Alaska Republican Party Chairman Tuckerman Babcock wrote a letter to both senators over the weekend reminding them that repealing the ACA was central to the Republican agenda. Conservatives on social media have been less polite. Murkowski says she wants health care reform, too, but she says this bill isn't ready for debate on the Senate floor.
At the end of the day, I'm looking at it through the lens of what do I think is best for Alaskans.
Her no vote was somewhat overshadowed by the return of Senator John McCain, fresh from surgery and a diagnosis of brain cancer. With a new scar over his left eye, the Arizona Republican said the process the bill went through was wrong. It was crafted among Republicans behind closed doors, and McCain says they tried to convince skeptical colleagues it was better than nothing.
That it's better than nothing? Asking us to swallow our doubts and force it past a unified opposition. I don't think that's going to work in the end, and probably shouldn't.
McCain says it was wrong when Democrats pushed the Affordable Care Act through with no Republican votes, and it's wrong to do the same to them now.
Hold hearings. Try to report a bill out of committee with contributions from both sides.
McCain's stance on the process was the same as Murkowski's, but he cast the decisive vote in favor of the procedural motion. He said he wanted debate to begin and to start amending the bill. Senator Dan Sullivan also voted yes, and he says it's just a starting point. He says he's been working behind the scenes to make the Senate proposal better for Alaska.
The status quo is unacceptable. In beginning the process, which is bipartisan now, you're going to see amendments on both sides and debate on both sides, is important. It's what I committed to, and it's why I voted that way.
Now the Senate will log 20 hours of debate. Technically, they voted to debate the bill the House passed, but Republican leaders say they'll swap the bill for something else. It's still unclear what exactly. Then the Senate will begin trying to amend it. Both Alaska senators say they don't know what the bill will look like in the end. Reporting from Washington, I'm Liz Ruskin.
Today, Governor Bill Walker signed into law House Bill 159, which aims to help prevent opioid addiction before it starts. The law puts new limits on opioids, like capping new prescriptions at 7 days' worth of pills, and requires training about abuse for medical practitioners. In February, Walker issued a disaster declaration for Alaska's ongoing opioid epidemic. The governor was at a homeless youth shelter center today in Wasilla for the bill signing. He says the multi-pronged legislation is a good first step.
The most important step is the next step, whatever that is. This is something that, to get on top of the situation, you have to have an action plan, and every day take another step you didn't take the day before.
Walker says more needs to be done, adding that at least 70 people have died in Alaska from overdoses attributed to prescription painkillers and heroin so far this year. The state's ongoing effort to prevent opioid addiction and overdoses falls under the purview of a team Walker assembled. The state's public health director, Dr. Jay Butler, leads that team and says prescriptions are only one part of the problem.
Things that we still need to do, address access to treatment for people with addiction, undoing some of the stigma that is associated with a variety of addictions, and then also getting into the more fundamental questions, such as how do we mitigate and prevent adverse childhood experiences, which we know is one of the drivers that put people at risk for substance misuse and addiction.
When asked about the U.S. Senate's vote on health care today, Walker responded by saying that repealing the Affordable Care Act without legislation to replace it would likely make it harder for Alaskans to get access to substance abuse treatment. Walker says he will not support any move that will hurt Alaskans and is staying in close contact with the state's congressional delegation.
I don't have a rearview mirror. I only have to look forward. Today is the vote it is, but I want to continue to stay in close contact with them, which they've been very good about keeping in contact with my office, with me personally about the legislation, because, you know, at the end of the day, the states are going to have to deal with this.
Asked about how Alaskan senators split on the vote and what his message is for the congressional delegation, Walker says he hopes to learn about what will be included in any upcoming health care legislation through his reports from the delegation. A Good Samaritan vessel and a Coast Guard aircrew rescued four fishermen in Kodiak waters on Monday. According to a Coast Guard press release, the fishing vessel Grayling capsized in Kuprianov Strait near Raspberry Island, and the nearby Chelista Marie came to their aid. An Air Station Kodiak MH-60 Jayhawk helicopter on a training flight also responded. Pilot Lieutenant Kevin Riley says they were flying in the vicinity of Old Harbor when they got word from Air Station Kodiak about the vessel's distress call. Riley says it took the helicopter crew about 20 minutes to travel the 55 miles to the location.
So we had just made one pass, maybe two, searching overhead of the seiner that was upside down now, and we could see the net through the water. When we saw visually and in our sensor, the crew member that was missing, basically floating.
Riley says when he brought the Jayhawk down into a hover, he saw the Grayling's captain plunge into the water to rescue the crewman.
And it looked like he was swimming very fast. I'm sure that the water was cold. It's probably in the upper 40s out there. But he was swimming extremely fast, considering he was in a life jacket.
According to the press release, the captain successfully performed CPR on the crewman, and they met up with the Coast Guard on the closest beach. Riley says usually radio communication is vital when working with partners on a rescue. In this case, the Good Samaritan responders were too busy during the rescue to talk.
We successfully coordinated with hand and arm signals, really, between our flight mechanic, who was in the door of the cabin of the helicopter, and looking at the boat. Once we saw, hey, they've got a good place here to beach their craft, we went over there and landed immediately and were able to get this fisherman out of the water extremely fast.
Riley says he's grateful for the help from the Good Samaritan vessel and others on scene.
You know, as part of our job, we're usually seeing people on some of the worst days of their lives, but it's really encouraging and heartening to see the best in people come out.
Once on the beach, the Jayhawk helicopter team flew the crewman to emergency services at the Kodiak Municipal Airport. According to the release, weather at the time was 17-mile-an-hour winds and 5-foot seas with high visibility. In June, the Washington Post reported that dozens of senior officials in the Department of Interior would be reassigned to new jobs. Now, one of those officials is speaking out. Joel Clement was part of a working group focused on village relocation and coastal resilience in Alaska, and he thinks he was targeted for his views on climate change. From Alaska's Energy Desk, Elizabeth Jenkins has more.
Joel Clement was a director at the Office of Policy Analysis. For over a year, he'd been meeting with different agencies about how to protect Alaska's villages from the effects of climate change. There are concerns about major erosion in Shishmaref, Kivalina, and Shaktulik. Parts of Nutok are sloughing into the water. And while relocation efforts have a ways to go, Clement says the conversation at the federal level had at least started.
The political will and the coordination were finally in place.
Then last month, Clement got an email.
Said you're being reassigned.
His interpretation of that?
We're going to reassign you to the place that has the least to do with what you know and understand.
Instead of working on climate change resiliency, Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke assigned Clement to an accounting job, collecting oil and gas royalties. Clement doesn't think the Trump administration understood the urgency of his work, that he was trying to help Alaska communities adapt to an imminent threat. He thinks they just saw climate change.
Just because this is caused by a warming, the climate change and warming, doesn't mean you can't focus on it.
So far, no one's taken Clement's old position. He hopes an investigation can shed some light on why he was reassigned. The Department of the Interior did not return calls in time for air. And Clement says he doesn't know who in D.C. will be the point person for Alaska villages, trying to relocate and adapt.
Well, there's really nobody home on this issue now, so I'm worried that it will fade from priority.
There is one federal official still working on this issue in Alaska. Joel Niemeyer chairs the Denali Commission. In 2015, President Barack Obama asked the Denali Commission to spearhead federal efforts on village relocation.
This will have to be something the country's going to have to address sometime in the future.
Niemeyer hopes the Trump administration won't drop the issue completely.
Every new administration wants to do things in their style, and we don't know what that is yet. If they pick up the issue, then we'll continue. If they choose not to, then I suppose then the state will take up full leadership on this issue.
Niemeyer says the effects of climate change are perhaps most clear in Alaska. But relocation isn't just an Alaska problem, and it's one the federal government will have to grapple with, one way or another. From Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Elizabeth Jenkins in Juneau.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, in light of declining state revenue, the Fairbanks City Council will put a property tax increase plan in front of local voters.
We're not going to be rescued this time. The world is awash in oil and gas.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, taking pride in its strong ties to Alaska's communities and in the 40 years of Alaska operations. The Medallion Foundation and the Federal Aviation Administration provide information on passengers' rights and responsibilities. More information at faa.gov/go/flyalaska. This message is sponsored by the Medallion Foundation.
This summer, the Veterans Administration in Alaska is making an aggressive push to hold town hall meetings across the state. Alaska's VA healthcare director, Dr. Timothy Ballard, was a guest on Talk of Alaska today, where he offered an update on the organization's progress and remaining challenges connecting veterans to benefits. That includes worry over privatization expressed recently by top VA officials. That's an issue Ballard says looks a little bit different in Alaska.
Privatization for us really doesn't look any different. It's still referring a lot of specialty care to the providers in the state that have it. For those things we can't get in the state, we look for partnering with other opportunities, whether it's in the lower 48 or not. So regardless of what happens in the VA throughout the entire country, I think our system is going to look pretty much the same as it has for the past decade or so because of the fact that we just provide the basics of outpatient services and refer out a lot of the rest.
The VA is the largest healthcare provider in the country and has about 36,000 members enrolled in Alaska, a little less than half of the state's total number of veterans. Since a series of reforms were hastily implemented under the Choice Act in 2014, Alaska has struggled to quickly connect veterans with healthcare providers outside the VA system. For example, staff in Alaska are now charged with handling 1,000 medical referrals a week. Ballard says they're working on a way to cut down the time it takes to process those referrals from a few weeks to a single day. But like many other issues within the VA, Ballard says the biggest barrier is chronic understaffing.
We are trying to hire more staff. As you can imagine, in a federal budget, we have a fixed budget. And so I'm trying to create money somewhere else in our system to buy more staff because we're really budgeted for 550, but mm-hmm. we need 650 to 700. But it is very slow going, and we are trying to make an effort in regards to getting more access.
Ballard says his team has made small gains hiring more medical professionals, including getting a physician at the Matsuk Valley Clinic for the first time in 5 years. The VA system in Alaska is still struggling to find solutions to many of the same problems the state faces with healthcare overall, such as insufficient access to mental health and substance abuse treatment, as well as the cost of care. Officials are holding a listening session tonight in Wasilla and two more in Juneau and Kenai during August, as well as a healthcare and benefits clinic during a motorcycle rally in Anchorage this Saturday. The Fairbanks City Council approved an ordinance last night that puts a proposed property tax increase to a public vote this fall. The hike is aimed at compensating for lost state revenue due to low oil prices. During a public hearing, former State Revenue Commissioner Mary Nordahl of Fairbanks told the council she served during the last major oil price slump recession in the 1980s, which lasted 2 years.
We're not going to be rescued this time. The world is awash in oil and gas.
City voters will be asked to approve raising property taxes by about $63 per $100,000 of assessed value to cover for $1.7 million in lost state revenue sharing. Nordahl described the property tax vote as a first step toward rethinking how local government is financed.
We need to think seriously about the services that are rendered, what services we want, how intensively we need those services, how we're going to finance them, and how the citizens are going to react within the confines that the financial strictures impose.
Nordahl advised the council to establish a committee to examine city services and how to pay for them. Councilmember Jerry Cleworth agreed, saying city codes guide spending and how contracts must be negotiated have not been followed in some cases, making it tough to ask property owners to accept a tax increase.
Before we ask people for money, I really think we need to get our house in order and do our jobs. And then we show that we've been prudent and that we've saved some money. We've actually made some hard choices. Then we take it to them.
The ordinance putting the tax hike question to voters was approved 4-2, with Cleworth and Councilmember David Pruse the no votes. The municipal election is October 3rd. Slow progress securing a sufficient natural gas supply is causing problems for the Interior Energy Project. A gas contract is key to the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority lead project to provide a lower-cost, cleaner-burning fuel to the Fairbanks North Pole area. IEP team leader Jean Theriault says a gas deal with Cook Inlet producers is expected this summer.
Contract in hand by the time of the next ADA board meeting, which is on the 10th of August.
The gas deal is being put together by Fairbanks Natural Gas, a local utility purchased by ADA in 2015 to advance the Interior Energy Project. FNG is currently operating on a limited contract to supply its existing 1,500 customers. FNG President and CEO Dan Britton says the deal, which expires next spring, is not sufficient for the larger needs of the Interior Energy Project.
We're looking to create options in the new contract which would allow us to expand gas service to more customers.
Another aspect of the Interior Energy Project is merging FNG into the Fairbanks North Star Borough's Interior Gas Utility to form a single nonprofit entity to distribute gas. The merger has been slowed by a funding issue. Theriault describes a temporary restriction included in project funding legislation.
That said that we were not able to expand the scope of work under the existing loan until we identified a source of gas.
The expendable gas supply would enable extension of service to more customers over new distribution lines installed in the North Pole area. That promises economies of scale, expected to lower the cost of gas. But in the meantime, Britain says rising operational costs of serving FNG's current small customer base are driving a rate hike.
There's been pricing pressure, and as a result, we're looking to increase rates by 3%.
Britain says that will boost the average residential gas customer's bill by more than $100 per year. He expects the increase to be temporary and says the Interior Energy Project continues to target a long-term gas price equivalent of $2 a gallon heating oil. A former Maryland teacher who'd gone on a cruise is now terminally ill and unable to leave an Alaska hospital. 71-year-old Nancy Greathouse and her husband Paul came to Alaska on a two-week cruise in April. But on April 28th, she suffered a respiratory crisis and was medevaced from the cruise ship to a hospital in Juneau. Now for the last 2 months, she's been at an Anchorage hospital. Greathouse has been diagnosed with terminal cancer, along with an autoimmune disease flare-up. She wants to live out her remaining days at home in Beltsville, Maryland, but doctors say she's not well enough to fly a commercial flight. A GoFundMe page has been set up to raise money for the medical evacuation flight, which could cost $50,000.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. Boating accidents happen, even to experienced boaters and on calm, sunny days. This boating season, make those you care about promise to be rescue ready by always wearing a life jacket when in an open boat or on deck, attaching the engine cutoff device when underway, and carrying emergency communication and distress signaling devices on their person. Visit pledgetolive.org for more. This message sponsored by the Alaska Office of Boating Safety.
A study of elk and bears on an island in the Kodiak Archipelago will try to help balance game management and logging. KMXT's Kayla DeRoche has more.
The Alaska Department of Fish and Game and its partners, including Kodiak Area Native Corporations, are at the beginning of a 2.5-year, $1.8 million study on a Fognak Island. Researchers hope it will lead to a long-term forest management strategy they can work on with native corporations that harvest the island's trees. Fish and Game Area Wildlife Biologist Nate Sabota says a varied terrain covers a Fognak, everything from old-growth forests to clear-cut areas from logging.
It's kind of a patchwork of units across the island, and so what we're interested in looking at is how does that impact animal movements and food resources.
He says they'll look at how the elk use the landscape through the seasons.
In the wintertime, there's been some research that shows that some of these animals, elk in particular, need wind-firm stands. So on these harsh winters that we have when we get a lot of snowfall or high winds, there's been some research that suggests that elk need these wind-firm stands so they can go to get thermal cover, you know, get be in these warmer areas out of the elements.
Sabota says elk may also graze in clear-cut areas because plants can grow better in those spots, and researchers will take a look at elk droppings to find out more about their diets. He says they're interested in similar information when it comes to bears.
You know, what resources are they using at different times of year? What habitats are they using? What are their movements throughout the year, different seasons, and on an annual basis? But then also we're looking at what impact, if any, are bears having on the elk population? So are bears eating elk calves, for instance?
At one point, they'd radio-collared around 50 elk and 40 bears, but the numbers are still working themselves out. Sabota says many of the collars fall off, especially when it comes to the male bears, which have thick necks and small heads.
It's like putting a collar on a funnel. They can get it off pretty easy. And so after we put 40 collars out, we went back and looked at the data, and about 15 of those collars already slipped off in a matter of 2 weeks.
He says collars are more likely to stay put on the female bears and the elk, but he says researchers were careful to make sure an animal can remove the collar if it really tries. In addition to tracking the location of the elk and the bears, researchers will take hair and blood samples and weigh the animals. By the end of the study, they hope to have a better idea of how the elk interact with the resources around them. I'm Kayla DeRoche.
Every summer at the University of Alaska in Anchorage, distinguished authors from around the country come to read their work and offer advice to burgeoning writers. The university's creative writing department recently celebrated the 10-year anniversary of its reading series. Alaska Public Media's Henry Leisha attended a lecture to hear how the program is connecting Alaskans with writers from across the U.S.
On a recent evening, Joanne Beard addresses a crowd of avid readers and writing students in a dimly lit auditorium. Beard is getting ready to read a passage from her 2011 novel In Zanesville, but pauses to tell the audience she's looking for a buddy to explore the Anchorage Museum.
So if anybody feels like going to the museum tomorrow afternoon, come see me afterwards and we'll make a plan to go.
Opportunities to hang out with popular authors like Beard don't pop up every day in Alaska. But the Northern Renaissance Arts and Science Series helps to foster a more accessible artistic community for writers. The reading series is part of a 2-week residency for master's students in the creative writing program. During the residency, students are plucked from their day-to-day lives as they work nonstop to hone their craft through a series of lectures, workshops, panels, and peer critiques. Lisa Selgi Pachuda, a student in her second year of the MFA program, says that she is able to get more out of the residency than a regular semester on campus.
I guess it's the lack of distraction, I guess, is what makes this so much more productive than a normal semester on campus. And we take it with us all year long. We talk to each other all year long, and we talk to our mentors all year long. But when we get here for this 2 weeks, we're 100% focused, and that's what I love about it.
But the nightly readings aren't just for students. Year after year, community members sit in on the free public lectures with well-known writers. Sherry Simpson, a professor of creative writing at UAA, says the series is valuable in a town where there aren't many opportunities to hear authors from around the country. And Simpson says that while you can easily pick up a print copy of a book, there is something special about hearing the words read aloud by the writer.
You can always return to those words, but they probably will never have the same power as when you heard the writer speak them out loud to everybody.
In June, the state legislature cut $8 million from the University of Alaska's current budget. When asked about plans for the future of the residency and reading series, the program's director, David Stevenson, just hopes to get through the fiscal issues facing public education in Alaska.
We're just going to try to keep ourselves viable and moving forward and filled with students, and that's a big enough task.
To listen to recordings of the readings from this series, visit the UAA website or alaskapublic.org. In Anchorage, I'm Henry Leisha.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. Tonight's stories can be found at our website, alaskapublic.org. You can also follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Kayla DeRoche in Kodiak, Elizabeth Jenkins in Juneau, Zachariah Hughes, Casey Grove, and Henry Leisha in Anchorage, and Dan Bross in Fairbanks. Our audio engineer is Eric Bork. Wesley Early is our web editor. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
ExxonMobil Alaska, whose goal is safe and responsible operations of the Point Thompson facility. ExxonMobil Energy lives here.
A Veterans Town Hall featuring Dr. Timothy Ballard will take place on August 1st from 5 to 6:30 p.m. in the Mendenhall Valley Public Library in Juneau. The VA welcomes frank and open discussions of veterans' concerns in all program areas. Time will be made available for individuals to address their concerns in one-on-one sessions. For more information, email samuel.hudson@va.gov. This message sponsored by the VA.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.